Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer Jimmy Israel with us from Cleveland. In our Washington, D.C. studios, we have Paul Butler. He is a law professor at Georgetown University. From NPR West, which is in Culver City, California, film writer, actor, and producer Rick Nahara. We hope to connect to Arsalan Iftikhar, founder of themuslimguide.com in Chicago. We're having a little trouble connecting with him, but we hope he'll be joining us. That being said, take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. First, props for that nice piece on Cleveland's own Ruby Dee. You know, she made her bones here. She made her bones here at Cleveland's Caramu Theater, the oldest Black American theater in America. May she rest with the angels. Everybody,
yeah.
Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
What's up?
Good, good. Good to be here.
All right, well, let's get things started. The San Antonio Spurs absolutely iced the Heat last night in Game 4 of the NBA Finals. Even the king, Miami's LeBron James, by way of Akron, seemed humbled by the 107-86 loss. Can we drop that tape, please?
I mean, they smashed us. Two straight home games, got off to awful starts. You know, they came in and you know, was much better than us in these two games. It's just that simple.
Yes, yes, it is, LeBron. But, you know, that puts the Miami Heat down 3-1 games in the series. No team has ever, and I mean with a capital E, come back from a deficit that far down in the finals. Paul Butler, Prince Paul, what are the guys, what are the old guys doing right?
Let's hear it. Let's hear it for the old heads on the San Antonio Spurs. This is generational. This is epic. It's gritty versus glitzy. I don't like dynasties in professional sports, so it's just enjoyable to see this dynasty fail. And my mom says I look like Tim Duncan.
Oh, well, okay.
Well, and mom's always right.
I think you're much more handsome than Tim Duncan.
Well, thank you, Michelle.
So, hey, now.
And enough with the haterade. Rick, go ahead. That being said, enough with the haterade.
Yeah, enough with the haterade.
Yes.
I think it's pretty much a done deal. It's a done deal. It can't come back after that.
Don't agree. Well, Jimmy, what do you think?
I think that if anybody can bring it back, it is LeBron. But I don't think LeBron is about that life. I think he might be a natural born loser. I mean,
he's got two rings. Yeah, how many you got?
I got the one that matters. But what I'm suggesting to you is that he chokes at the point, and you have to be a finisher in life in this game. That's just the way of it, and I don't know if he's about that life. I just think he doesn't like the pressure. He likes the glam. He likes the pop bottles. He likes the win, but he doesn't like the pressure of that can come with the win. So I don't know.
Well,
come on, man.
Thank you, Arsalan.
Yeah.
Step up.
Yeah,
thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah. A-Train, say what you got to say, bro.
Listen, I'm rooting for the San Antonio Spurs, but as long as LeBron James is in any playoff series, this ain't over until the Spurs seal the deal. It's been an incredible series so far. The fact that the Spurs were able to spank the Heat twice at home in Miami. They need to go back to San Antonio. They need to finish it off right now. And, you know, if they're able to finish off the Heat, the NBA Finals MVP is going to be none other than who, what, where, when, Kawhi Leonard. That man has been balling like a grown man. It's been a pleasure to watch.
You know, what's been interesting to me, though, is that people celebrate, you know, LeBron for his physicality, but I've been really interested in how he's analyzed each game. I've really enjoyed listening to how he analyzed each game, and he talked about how you have to keep your eyes on every man up until the 24th second. You can't play for 20 seconds. It's got to be through the 24th. I've just sort of learned a lot from listening to him kind of analyze the game, but it is interesting to me, like, how it is that you can't, that they haven't been able to execute. I just find that I don't really understand that, Paul, do you?
Yeah, I mean, LeBron is growing. I mean, he's growing into his grown man self. And what I like about him is not just in basketball, but in life. I mean, he's one of the most political of all the NBA speakers. He was one of the first to speak out against Sterling. He was down with the Florida case. So, mad props for that.
All right, we'll kick it over to the soccer field.
Yeah,
Jimmy.
A-Train, Arsalan, you have to be the only American-born dude I know who watches World Cup 24/7. What's
Come
up with
on,
that, bro?
Man.
Seriously. Real talk. No, see, real talk.
The World Cup is it's the unifying factor for the world. You know, it happens every 4 years. It has taken over for the Olympics as sort of the globalist Coca-Cola moment. And, you know, it started out great. You know, the first day you had Brazil and Croatia, and which was a tight game until a very controversial penalty call, which resulted in a penalty kick, and Brazil was able to take the game against Croatia. It's going to be really interesting to see if they're going to be able to win, being the host country. But, you know, you have teams like Spain and Germany and other powerhouses. It's going to be a fantastic, fantastic few weeks of the World Cup.
Is it? Can I ask, Arsalan, is it harshing your mellow at all that there have been so many street demonstrations? I mean, obviously, yeah. There was a lot of talk up until the Olympics in Russia, the Sochi Winter Olympics, that there was a lot of unhappiness there with the way this whole thing proceeded. I mean, the amount, the expense, all the people who've been cleared out of their houses. But it seemed like once the games got started, people kind of rally to it, and that does not seem to be the case here at all. And I just wondered, is it kind of diminishing your enjoyment of the whole experience that people are so angry that there's been so much violence? And so,
no, you're absolutely right, Michelle. And you know, it hits the nail on the head about these major world events like the World Cup or the Olympics, where essentially these host countries build these gigantic multi-billion-dollar stadiums, which then become white elephants after these events are over and are essentially empty, and those multi-billion dollars could be used for healthcare, education, employment programs for these host countries. And it shows, I mean, Brazil, the religion of Brazil is soccer. And the fact that they are willing to, you know, essentially forsake their religion for the betterment of their own people on the streets really shows that they have their priorities straight as a society.
But just don't watch it. Anybody else care? Anybody else? Paul doesn't care. Rick, you care?
Well, Rick, you down with CUP?
Yeah, I'm down with looking at this thing going, they spent $11 billion in Brazil for these soccer. That's like a ghetto father spending all his money on a big screen TV when they're evicting him. I mean, that's just wrong. So it's hard for me to enjoy the game the same way, even though I will enjoy the game. You know, I predict Brazil will win. They'll have to win, else there'll be really big riots. There'll be like double riots.
How about that? It's an interesting question. It kind of reminds me of the conversations we have a lot about football. Because on the one hand, you're a fan and you love the game, and then you start thinking about the impact that it has and how, you know, how are you supposed to put all that together. I mean, it's not a small question. So anyway,
and just to point out, by football, Michelle, you meant real football. I hate when they call that game soccer or football. Football is 300-pound dudes trying to knock each other down.
That's to you.
No jingoism there.
Awesome American. No, yeah, I know,
jingoism,
right?
There.
Yeah,
that's excuse me.
Yeah, well, I hate to say it. They call it football. it's pronounced a little bit differently. But yeah, I think it is a world sport. I mean, this is every 4 years. This is amazing. And this is a unifying fact for the world. More people watch this than the Super Bowl and everything else combined. This is it.
It is kind of weird, though. It's the biggest youth sport, you know, in America. By far. You know, millions of kids play soccer, and somehow it just doesn't translate into the adult world. I don't know.
You know, it's going to translate, because right now all those kids are a new generation. I'm watching my own son, Julian, is a soccer star. All he talks about is soccer. And he's wearing a Mexico jersey right now because Mexico's playing.
Well, I have a theory, and I'll just throw it out there, and then we'll move on, which is that my theory is that the advent of the big screen, you mentioned big screens earlier, Rick, that I think the advent of the big screen is going to enhance our appreciation of it, because you can see the whole field. And I just feel like that's what you need. You need to see the whole field to really feel the game. Yeah. That's just my theory. I could be wrong.
No, I think you're right, because it's a youth. It's the younger generation that's going to look at soccer in a whole different way than the older generation is. So I think it's just going to grow.
You mean like Grouchy Paul?
if
you're just joining us, we're having our weekly Barbershop Roundtable with writer Jimmy Israel, Professor Arsalan Iftikhar, film and television writer and producer Rick Nahara, and law professor Paul Butler. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Okay, well, TMZ breaks a lot of big stories, but no one ever called it ethical journalism. Still, some folks are petitioning the website to take down a video of the crash scene involving comedian Tracy Morgan, Michelle.
Well, that's right. Many people will remember that Tracy Morgan and five others were heading back from a comedy gig last Saturday night when a Walmart truck struck their limo bus. One person died. Morgan and a number of others were badly injured. The daughter of one of the injured New Jersey comedian Artie Fuqua has asked TMZ to take the video down, and saying on Instagram, "They don't understand how hurtful it is to see my father be dragged out of the wreckage along with all the other false information on his condition. I understand people want to know and people want to be updated, but enough is enough." So, Jimmy, I'm interested in your take on this, because you're kind of a First Amendment absolutist. On the other hand, you're also a human being, and feel that, you know, what about that?
I think entertainment news is dicey at best, but if you're going to do it, then you have to do it right. And I mean, the Zapruder film is available, and that is a most unfortunate recording. So if that's available for us as the general public to check out, and
he's the president of the United States. That's a little different, isn't it? You don't think that's
I think journalism is journalism. I think if you're going to do it, then you have to do it right. Hashtag Wham reference. You know, I mean, that's just my feeling.
All right, Rick, what do you think as a person who's kind of in the world, too, where celebrities are often like, that's the whole trick, is to get celebrities into a position that's uncomfortable or not flattering or whatever.
We live in a reality world. I mean, come on. I live in the TMZ area. You know, I was just walking down Rodeo Drive, and there's a little white kid next to me, and a black man actually walked by, and the kid looked and said, "Is that Seal?" I mean, to me, that is all about celebrity. She assumed it's Seal. It was a black man, just a regular black man, and she thought it was Seal. And I look at that, and I go, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, when you look at journalism, like when you see Robert Kennedy shot and a busboy holding his head with a rosary, it's powerful journalism. That's a very powerful photograph. And in some ways, when you look at TMZ, and they're like the National Enquirer of what journalism would be. So in some ways, I think it's a double-edged sword. If you're going to live by celebrity, you're going to die by celebrity too. I mean, you are in an open field. And some people might look at – I looked at that same footage of him being – a man being dragged out of that wreckage and thinking, oh, good, he's getting medical aid. That made me feel better. Actually, I didn't see it as exploitive, although I'm sure it was.
Paul, what do you think?
This is getting a little too highbrow for me. People like looking at gross stuff. When I heard about this video, I rushed to the TMZ site and I peeped it. There's this Andy Warhol series called Car Wreck, and I saw it at an exhibit, and people were leaning in. They were like, is that blood over there? Is that a body part? There's something about inspecting the gruesome that's cathartic. It quenches some base emotion that we have.
Arsene, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we live in a completely voyeuristic society now. You know, with the ubiquitousness of smartphone videos, you know, we sometimes citizen journalists, you know, get stories and scoops before CNN is able to. And I think here, you know, this is a double-edged sword of celebrity. You know, I think if Tracy Morgan wasn't a famous person, if it was a Jeffrey Morgan who had gotten into this car wreck, I don't think anybody would be calling for this video to be removed. Let's not forget.
Well, they might,
you know, in 1994, when Tupac was shot, right, the autopsy photos of Tupac with the bullet holes, you know, they made it into our zeitgeist as well. You know, this is just, you know, an unintended consequence of our voyeuristic society now.
Well, you know, that there are some people, speaking of which, this is the last thing I wanted to talk about today, and I wanted to save some time to talk about that. There are those who think that this kind of started in the modern era. I mean, gossip has always been among us, you know, passing rumors, wanting to know people's business, that has always been among us. But this idea that we should be able to look at this stuff 24/7, a lot of people think that started with the O.J. trial. There was nonstop coverage of the O.J. Simpson trial. It's 20 years ago. Even if you wanted to avoid it, you couldn't. I don't know. What do you all think about that? Do you think that this thing has a lasting impact? Do you credit that theory? I mean, Jimmy, do you want to start?
I'm scared to talk about the OJ trial only because I think what you're saying is true, and I think everything, both good and bad, we say about the OJ trial is true. I think it was a moment in American history where you got to learn that your white neighbor wasn't as liberal as you thought he was, and the white neighbor learned that there was something about black American justice and justice that he didn't know, that almost everybody black I know knows that OJ did it, and it wasn't even the point. The point was that for everybody that didn't do it, they got set up, for the Emmett Teals, for everybody, for the James Byrds, for the people that James Byrd doesn't count, but I'm just saying people that were robbed of justice. Mm-hmm. You know, OJ bought himself justice, and it was for a moment. It was good to see a black man be able to have enough money in his pocket to buy the kind of justice he wanted. Whether he deserved it or not, certainly a different question.
Paul, what do you think?
And I think white people are listening to Jimmy and asking, what planet does this man live on? So I think the case created this cynicism about race relations that's still very present in our culture. And in fact, part of what was so appealing about Barack Obama was the hope that he could bridge that gap. And we see how well that worked out.
What do you think, Rick? You're out there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I look at it this way. I guess I'm in the middle brown side on this one, because, you know, as Latinos, we really felt that we knew that people of color didn't get the best justice, and normally you needed the best legal team for it. The trial proved that to everyone beyond belief. And then I think for white people, it was what you said, is that they were surprised that, wow, justice is blind and can be influenced. It was without a doubt. And it was unfortunate because the moral thing was, is most of us believed he was guilty, and I still do.
You know, what's interesting, though, people forget that the data show that, forgive me, I don't remember the Latino number. I remember that 2/3 of African-Americans thought he was innocent and 1/3 thought he was guilty. And it was reverse. It was 2/3 of whites surveyed thought he was guilty and 1/3 thought he was innocent. But that's 1/3 thought he was innocent. And the number of white people who thought he was innocent as a number would exceed the number of black people who thought the same. You see what I'm saying? So that's a lot of people. And somehow those people are all disappeared in this conversation. There were a lot of different opinions about this. And somehow that seems to have been lost. Harsan, you get the final thought here briefly, if you would.
You know, as a lawyer myself, I know Paul Butler is a lawyer also. The O.J. Simpson trial was the first time in my life where it was sort of this watershed moment for me where I realized that what Jimmy said, that people who are rich in America, regardless of your color, can afford the legal team needed to get people off. If he was a poor white man, I think he would have been found guilty. If he was a poor black man, I think he would have been found guilty. If he was a poor brown man, I think he would have been found guilty. I think the O.J. Simpson trial showed America that if you're rich enough to afford the legal team, they can get you off.
Yes.
All right. Well, let's on a happier note, let me just say happy Father's Day to the fathers. Let me say happy 90th birthday to George H.W. Bush. And since he jumped out of a plane on his 90th birthday, I will be expecting no less for the rest of you who are not yet achieved, who have not yet achieved that number. Jimmy Israel is a writer. You can find his blog at jimmyisrael.com. Rick Nahara is a film and television writer and actor and producer. Arsalan Iftikhar is founder of themuslimguide.com and an adjunct professor of religious studies at DePaul University. Paul Butler is a law professor at Georgetown University. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.